This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Corinne Demas, who's the author of a new novel called The Writing Circle. Hi, Corinne.
Hi, David.
And I should ask, is your last name pronounced Demas, D-E-M-A-S?
Got it right. Beautiful.
I got it right. I can't believe it. Well, I'm glad to talk to you today. The Writing Circle is an adult novel. You've written a lot of children's books. But you are not a children's book writer, per se. I think you've also written a lot of short stories. You've written a couple of novels before. But as a writer, how do you feel about moving back and forth between these different forms? Short story, poetry, children's books and adult books are all really, really different.
I love it, actually. I think it's really nice to have a change of pace. And when I'm working on an adult novel, which can go on for several years, it's really refreshing to be able to take a break and to work on a picture book, for instance. When I was working on my memoir, which is nonfiction, it was really wonderful to take a break, say, and write some poetry. So I think different books and different audiences pull out different things from a writer. And I think that it's really a pleasure to be able to move from one genre to another. I mean, you know, they're different tones, they have different feelings, and they sort of take different aspects of your talent.
Well, it's really interesting that you should say that, because I hadn't really thought of this before I asked you that question, but as I was reading The Writing Circle, which I really liked a lot, and I should say it's about a group of writers who are in the Writing Circle, is where they meet and talk, read each other's work and talk about it. And what I noticed in the book, and I thought was really amazing, was that you have these different writers within the circle who are, you know, a couple of novelists, a poet, a historian. I mean, in fact, the writers in the writing circle are as different as your own work. And I was curious about how you were able to speak in these other writers' voices so coherently.
Well, thank you. That's actually a lovely compliment. I should say, to preface all this, that the idea of having the text of the writer's work in the novel was really suggested by my editor. I had the writing group meet, and they were talking about each other's manuscripts, but they were referring to manuscripts that weren't in my actual novel. And my editor said, Corinne, I'd really love it if you could include whole parts of these books so that the reader of your novel, The Writing Circle, could see the text that these people are discussing. Oh, well, there went months of my life, but it turned out to be great fun. Some of the work was easier to do than others. There's a poet in the group named Jillian, and I do write some poetry myself, so what I basically did was use my own poetry, unpublished poetry. This book has a theme of one of the interests that I have is about the big question about plagiarism. So I didn't plagiarize from anything. I just used some of my own unpublished poetry, and I Jillianized it. That is, I wrote poems in the voice of my character, which she has a different narrative style than I do. There's a young novelist in the group named Adam, and he writes tremendously verbose novels, and he loves his own words, and it was lots of fun to write his book. It was everything I tell my creative writing students not to do. Nancy's a novelist, and her novel's sort of central to the book. There's a journalist who's now a thriller writer who is very successful, and his name's Chris, and he's written a sort of thriller. And I happened to have been called jury duty around the time I was working on that part of it. And the case that I was asked to look at, I wasn't seated on the jury, but I spent a lot of time there, was a fairly violent case and quite exciting. And it fit right into Chris's book, and it gave me a lot of wonderful raw material. The biographer was more difficult. He's an Anglophile. He's very learned. He's knows a great deal about music. And I had him writing about Henry Purcell. Somebody came out with a review of an exquisite biography of Henry Purcell just about the same time, and I realized I didn't want to confuse it and have anyone think that was the real author. So I hunted around and finally decided he'd write about George Richard Tandel, and which meant I had to do a lot of listening to Tandel, and I read a lot about him and read his letters, and then had to create the book that my character Bernard would have written about him, and then pick a section of it that I would include in the book. The most difficult was Virginia, who writes historical fiction, and in my original version of the writing circle, she'd been a medievalist, and I'm not a medievalist, and I really didn't feel that I could write a good enough section of her book. So I changed the area and had it about ancient Greece, which I knew a little bit about and felt a little bit more confident writing from. But each of these books was really a new breath and an adventure for me.
Oh, it's an amazing idea. Obviously fun, but also really hard work, I think, to speak in those different voices and pull it off so that they're, you know, they may, obviously, they're written by you, so they have to look like your work. But, you know, for me as a reader, it was a, you know, pretty much of a virtuoso performance that you were able to be all of these different personae at all at the same time.
Oh, thank you. I love hearing that.
And actually, I thought, you know, maybe the you should finish the Handel biography. You might have to do
that. I need about 5 years for that one, David.
But that would be, you know, that would be a truly great accomplishment, so that you know, a nonfiction work spun out of a novel written by the imaginary character in the novel, but written for real. That would be pretty cool.
Oh, that's a brilliant idea. Manolio will have to give me a list of that.
Right. Or you could write Jillian's poems, you know, write the entire book. Now, she is a very complicated character. And of course, all of these characters each come to life. And I really felt, you know, that one of your accomplishments here was that this is not a really long book. And you're able to capture each of these individuals, I think, really well, with not, you know, with not extensive amount of writing about them. So it's much more suggestion, you know, and which I like. You know, as the reader, you want to be able to participate in the story imaginatively. So, you know, you've given us these characters, and I get to imagine them as they are. But I think, you know, it's pretty remarkable that they're not, you know, you didn't require 600 or 800 pages to do this in. It's really a pretty short book.
Well, it's almost 400 pages. It seems a lot of book to me. I do know that there are readers who say they want more, they want a sequel, and some people want a Nancy sequel, some people want a Jillian sequel, so actually I could write 6 books, right? A sequel for each of the characters in which you'd hear more of their story.
Well, that's true, you could. But, of course, the story here is really the intricacy of the relationships of these authors together.
Yes, absolutely, you know, and it's where their lives intersect.
Right, and it is about more than their writing, although the writing, as you said, and we don't want to give away storyline. I think it's really important for readers to be able to read without expectation, without knowing what's going to happen. But we can, you know, as you alluded to, the plagiarism plays a role in the story. And that's a kind of ongoing issue for a lot of writers, I think.
Right, and it's a really hot topic today, which is why I mentioned it. And for writers, it's a very interesting one because there's a basic ethical dilemma. And because there's a very intriguing gray area.
Well, because, and also, as many critics have said, and I think a lot of writers will admit, we all stand on the shoulders as writers of the people who wrote before us.
Absolutely.
And you absorb, that's the cultural discourse, that you're reading what went before you is what allows you to be creative in your own time. And so there you have that, I mean, obviously, plagiarism is different from being influenced by or being moved by or even in some way paying homage to, kind of mimicking the voice of another writer is not bad as long as you say as part of the work, that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
It's when you hide it or don't admit that the influence occurred that people get into trouble. And of course, your character, Jillian, is complicated. It's not a simple case of she copied this work and tried to present it as her own.
Right.
It's much more complicated than that. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't say anything more so that we don't give away too much of the story. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to ask you was, and whether you did this on purpose, that the book is the writing circle becomes also a way that the story is told. I sort of felt that the story itself was a kind of circular telling, and not in the simplistic way that you would be alternating voices, although you do alternate through the story, but just that it became kind of tighter and tighter, circular.
Good, thank you. That's what I was hoping you'd see.
Well, yeah, no, it definitely worked. It almost is like a, as you imagine the way water goes down a drain is kind of tighter and tighter circles. And that's how I felt the story kind of went. And I wanted to ask you if you did that on purpose.
I did, and I'm really interested in unintended consequences and how these small things that people do in their lives have repercussions that go beyond them. And I have 6 people in this writing circle, but each of them has a circle of his or her own, and some of the minor characters in this novel, what happens in their lives, feed into what goes on in the circle and what actually happens in the end of the book. So, yes, there are many circles, and they're kind of twisting around.
Right. Well, and of course, yes, the interlocking relationships of a couple of members of the circle that had been, Virginia and
Bernard
had been
married, right?
Right, and then they have children that, the daughter, Rachel, is a minor character, as you say, and I don't want to give away too much, but there are a lot of interlocking circles.
And that's the way it is in life. I think people are constantly discovering this.
Right. Well, it's true, and you find that you know people who knew people that you didn't realize were related to you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you feel like some of that comes about because of where you live? I mean, you live in a fairly small community. It's I know you live in Western Massachusetts, and is it partially related to that?
Well, no, because I'm actually a New Yorker, which is a much bigger place, and I lived for many years in Pittsburgh. So I think it really has to do with the way groups function, and I think people always seek out groups. And writers happen to be particularly interesting groups because they talk a lot and write a lot and think a lot and are fairly intense as a
Well, and that shows in the writing circle, of course, the ego. I mean, it's so complicated, and you really wonder how. I know you are yourself in a writing group like the one that you have written about, where I assume you get together with other writers and you read each other's work and talk about the work. But it seems like such a fraught experience. It puts you, I mean, it can be wonderful because you're talking to people who are collegial and who love you and love your work. And who can still respect you enough to tell you the truth. But at the same time, it's complicated. Everybody brings their whole set of experiences and relationships into those kinds of situations, and, it could be difficult.
And it is, because writers are really vulnerable. Even the most famous and successful writers still have ego involvement in their work, and very often there are autobiographical elements, and there's a tremendous sense of fragility when you take what was really essentially something private that you've been working on and lay it out in front of others.
Right. Well, you're taking a huge risk.
Oh, yes. I do want to say that I've promised my own writing group that I'd let everyone know that this novel is not about them. They're, in fact, thanked in the back of the book, and they heard this novel chapter by chapter for many, many months, over a year, and none of them are any of the characters. So I've promised them I would tell you all that.
You know, and I also, I say this often when I talk to fiction writers and when we do these conversations, that it's really important to remember that fiction is not biography or autobiography, that people that fiction is for telling the truth, but it doesn't necessarily relate immediately back to a direct experience that the writers had last week or the day before. You know, people write about they write about lots of different things, but they're not modeling their stories on their friends.
Absolutely, and I've belonged to a number of writing groups. I have another writing group that we get together at a cafe on Fridays and sort of chat and support each other. And I've been involved in writing groups over the years. So many people have fit into this book, and I've certainly heard about many other groups. And as I say, I'm writing about a writing group, but I know that the dynamics are similar to the way other groups function. I've seen this happen in groups that aren't writers, and I've certainly heard about situations like this. People in groups are competitive also, which is one reason, to go back to an earlier question of yours, it's another reason why I decided to have my characters write different genres, because I didn't want them to be really neck-to-neck competitive. I didn't want this to be a group of poets, for instance. My characters are competitive about their genre. Jillian really believes that poetry is the superior art form, and Chris has sort of problems because he writes these thrillers, he makes a lot of money, and people don't think he's as literary as they are. So people are really protective of their genres, and within my group, I wanted to show that array.
Well, and of course, there is the inevitable question of which of the characters you liked the best or felt most sympathetic to, if you're as the writer, is there one for you?
The novel begins with Nancy, and Nancy is the new member of the group, and always a new member is in a special place. She comes into this group, she doesn't quite know whether she's going to be accepted because she discovers at her very first meeting that she's actually on trial, that she's not really being asked to become a member, she's being asked to come to a meeting so that they can check her out. She hasn't been with the group that long, she doesn't really know how they work. Nancy's really nice, she really cares about being good. She tries very hard, she's somewhat proper. I like Nancy a whole lot. She's extremely conscientious about ethical and moral questions. Almost impossibly so, some people might say. She wasn't as much fun to write about, however, as Jillian. Jillian is beautiful, she's seductive, she's powerful, she's successful as a poet, which is unusual. Some people say an oxymoron. And she's somewhat amoral, and she is really out for herself and her own interests. So these two women are kind of, if you think of them as ethically polar opposites. Jillian is probably not someone that I would choose as a friend. I would feel, I wouldn't quite trust her. But as a character, oh, she was just delicious to work with.
Well, do you feel like you will write about her again? Is she still with you?
She really consumed a lot, I must say. I'm not sure, David. I'll have to think about that one.
Well, because, as you know, it is, I think, safe to say that as the story ends, that not all has been completed. In other words, there is room, I think, for something else to happen.
Some more. And the best books are like that, aren't they?
I think
we don't tuck everything in. I write for readers, and I assume they're intelligent, and I want them to think and sort of imagine each of these characters in the white space after the book is done.
Right. I think you succeeded in that. And, I guess I thought that maybe there was a place to go with, any one of these characters you could do more with. I certainly thought Bernard has a lot going on, and so does Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say even that the others aren't interesting too. But I think, I was kind of, it's hard if you know a lot of writers. It's hard not to not necessarily look for the direct analog, but to think about them as types.
Yeah.
And think, oh, I know somebody like that. Who could fit into that category. And in fact, I was thinking about this, that, as you said, right, it's not necessarily groups of writers that this would apply to. I've come across social groups where they are intertwined and connected in the same way that you have your characters connected, you know, where there are wives, ex-husbands, wives, children, friends, that they all kind of travel in the same circle in that loose way, loose sense of the term.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of interesting things going on that become, you know, literally either stories or could be stories. And I think clearly, you know, you've created a lot. I mean, with these six main characters and even some of the minor characters, a pretty interesting cast.
Well, thank you, David. And I should tell you, and probably those of you who are a writer also, when I was done with this book and when I sent it off, I felt positively bereft. I had been living with these characters for a couple of years, and they really were in my head all the time. And when the novel was finally done, I missed them. I missed having them accompany me.
Yeah, which sort of goes to my question of whether they were still with you afterwards. But it sounds like, you know, with the book done, that part is, you know, at least up to now, they haven't come back and enforced themselves into your imagination yet.
Well, they're still there, and they inhabit it. And when I do readings from this novel or when I talk to people about it, suddenly my characters are vividly in front of me, you know, sort of all seeking attention and wanting to be on stage again.
Right. Well, I've heard that. You know, I think with writers, when you, especially if you're going to create imaginative characters or imaginatively create characters for a novel, you have to, they have to inhabit your psyche.
Mm-hmm.
For this to work.
And one of the hard things is that I'm working on a new novel, and I have a new cast of characters, and they're competing for my attention.
Right. Well, that's always, I think that's hard. You know, the timing of a book is completed, and then it takes a couple of years for the book to come out. Often, then, you'll be working on another book when just at the moment when you need to take the previous book public.
Absolutely.
That's difficult.
My new book is quite different. It's about a family and a sort of struggle within a group of siblings. But again, it's a group, actually, now that I think about it. It has a different feel. It has a different voice. But there are the characters, and I think, what would it be like to get them all on stage at the same time? In other words, sort of have a blending of the books. It would be sort of like a mixer, you know.
Right, that could be like a mashup, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So is the new book also contemporary?
It's a contemporary novel, and it should be out next summer, so I'm working hard.
So is this like the direction you're going in? Because I noticed earlier in your writing career, you wrote more historical summaries, it looks like. I mean, not historical summaries, but historical novels?
I did do a historical novel. I wrote a YA historical novel, YA historical novel called If Ever I Return Again, which was set on a whaling ship in the mid-1800s. And I really steeped myself into that century then, and I knew an awful lot about maritime stuff and the lives of women in a small seaside village and what it was like living in a whale ship, and I really inundated myself in that period, and it was kind of a relief to be working on a contemporary book. I didn't have to worry about all the terms and what people were actually wearing and what their shoes were like.
So do you kind of, it sounds like you're happier doing contemporary writing.
I am, although the historical stuff was fun too because I got to do research, and that's always really exciting. I love to dig around in historical societies and read old letters and read old journals. So it was pleasure, but it was a lot of work also. I had to learn how to do things like use a sextant and figure out, you know, how they would carve up a whale and all kinds of things, which, you know, who knows, they might be useful in my daily life sometimes.
Well, so do you still write children's books, too?
I do. I have several that are on their way. I've been working on a children's book, which will be published, not so long, next season, called Pirates Go to School, which is in rhyme and couplets, if you can imagine. I have a sequel coming out to my picture book, Valentine's Surprise, called Halloween Surprise, I have a YA novel that's coming out in the spring called Everything I Was. So I do have a number of children's book projects that are moving along concurrently. Picture books take a long time because after you're done writing the text, the publisher then finds an illustrator, and then the illustrator can take a year or more working on the illustration. So you really have to be able to postpone your gratification on that one. And I say that tongue-in-cheek because I have my collection of poems that's called The Donkeys Postpone Gratification. So the authors have to postpone gratification, too.
Well, you're amazingly prolific. I'm impressed.
Well, I've just been very lucky recently, and you know, as you know, in the publishing industry, books can clump. I mean, you can go for years writing a lot of things and not placing them, and you can place things and then have them not come out for quite a while. So sometimes writers look more prolific than they in fact are, and then they're
you have to write them in order for them to be published, and there's a lot of rewriting going on. So
right. Yeah. And a great deal of what I write never gets published. I mean, you know, what's actually in print is just a small part of it. So I suffer a great deal of rejection, as most writers do.
Well, I think, at least the number of books you have published is pretty impressive, especially the number of children's books. It's a nice long list of books. And you teach at the same time. So.
I do. I have a wonderful job at Mount Holyoke College, and it's really a joy as a writer to have what I think of as a separate and complementary career, because I have an excuse to get dressed and get out of my sweatpants and go somewhere and deal with students whom I love and run a seminar and be in a group, a group of colleagues whom I really respect. And writing's a really lonely profession, and it's nice to have a community. And Mount Holyoke's really supportive of its faculty and makes it possible for me to do both.
So do you write, I mean, do you teach creative writing?
I do. I mean, I have a PhD in literature and 20th century British and American and comparative literature, but I really enjoy teaching creative writing the most, and it's good to be able to work with students who are involved in an enterprise that's similar to my own enterprise, what my husband calls my cottage industry.
Well, and that's certainly, I mean, do you feel like there's a conflict ever between your own, I mean, does it, like, you, when you're teaching, you have to pay attention to the work of all these students, obviously, and, you know, that also then has to inhabit your imagination, at least part of it.
It does, so. And they really have to, you know, my students have to come first while I'm, you know, while I'm dealing with my semester. I tend to do more of my writing during the summer and off times, not during my heavy teaching times. Teaching times are better suited to working on smaller projects and working on revisions, because teaching is fairly consuming also.
Right. No, I would imagine that is clearly not necessarily a difficulty, but an issue that you have to, you know, allow the time for your kind of creative concentration to occur, probably in periods when you're not working on the classes.
But you know, my students also revitalize me. I mean, they remind me of how lucky I am to be a writer, and their enthusiasm is contagious. I mean, they're excited about writing, and I love being involved in it with them. And I do let them know about what I'm working on, and, you know, try not to frustrate them and show them that it's how hard it is. What I really want them to see is what a joy it is.
Right. Well, it's good for, you know, it is good to, I think it is a really good dynamic for a writer to have the students' kind of enthusiasm continually revitalizes you. But it's also good for them to have their enthusiasm, you know, kind of tenored with a certain amount of the reality of how much hard work it is. Because I think often, you know, the younger writers feel like, you know, it's pretty easy. I just write this stuff and then I'll be famous, you know.
One of the things that my students are most amazed about is how long it all takes. I mean, I've been teaching a seminar and I'll share with them, you know, what's happening in my publishing life. And they expect the book to, you know, they see the bound galleys and they expect the book to be out, or they see me working on something and they expect to see it in print. And they're amazed at how many months it takes, and you know, how long that gestation period is, and also how many other people are involved. And I think they get a kick out of seeing the fact that even though I'm their professor and write comments on their papers or giving them suggestions, that I'm also getting suggestions and getting comments from my editors. So in a way, I'm kind of in the same place
right.
where they are.
Right. You're not. I mean, that is. I think that's an interesting. It's always true that every writer needs an editor, and I would say that to the most experienced writers as well as the youngest writers. It doesn't matter. You need somebody who can read your work and feed it back to you as the imaginary reader. I think that's really important.
And I tell them, I say, well, I turned in this manuscript, I thought it was perfect, and then I got 3 pages single-spaced of comments from my editor, and, oh, I know how that feels. And it's exactly the way they feel when they turn in a short story, and then I write little notes all over it, and they get it back, and they look at it, and they think, oh, I thought it was perfect, and now Professor Demas thinks I need to do all these, think about all these things.
Oh, I know. I'm always amazed at, actually, I think what is one of the measures of a really good writer is how many times you're willing to rewrite, because that is a big part of turning the work into something really great. And I think that's really, it's a daunting task. It's really hard.
The best books are really team effort. And readers rarely realize when they read a book how much has gone into it that's not just the author. I mean, I have a spouse and a daughter who reads my stuff, and then I have this wonderful writing group. There are 7 other people in it, and they hear it, and they all offer feedback, and they're all published writers. And then I have this really brilliant editor who reads it, and I have this terrific agent who reads it. So I hear a lot, and they're all important to me.
I think that's actually very... It's an important fact, and I think it's really good that you mentioned that, because it is. It's not just, you may be alone when you're writing, it's between you and the page, but then there's a whole lot of other people who can provide input and make you a better writer.
And the last person is that copy editor who's convinced that it should be a comma when you think it should be a semicolon.
That's right. Well,
lots of little notes back and forth about it. And you worry so much about that semicolon, and then the book comes out, and you can't quite remember whether you were arguing in favor of the comma or the semicolon. So a lot of it is angst that disappears.
That's great. Well, listen, it's been wonderful talking to you. I've been talking to Corinne Demas, who's the author of The Writing Circle. As we write this, or as we talk this, the book has just come out, and it's a wonderful novel. I think that I hope that other people will enjoy it as much as I did. And this has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. It's been delightful to talk with you.